Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, Dr. Toni and I are going to be talking about habits. Right now, during the pandemic, some people have really adopted a healthier lifestyle. They might be at home more. They might not be juggling kids home at school. They're using, you know, Peloton to work out. They might be socially distanced walking with their friends. But other people might have picked up some bad habits and let go of other healthy habits, like going to the gym. You know, if your kids are home, your routines can be totally thrown off. That self-care time can be gone out the window. So I think it's really important to have a check-in to see where are we with healthy habits, what potentially harmful habits have crept in and why. And we're going to talk a little bit about Gretchen Rubin's framework called the Four Tendencies, because awareness is the first step to know why you keep or don't keep habits. So then you know how to work with your tendency or your personality type, if you will, to be able to strategize to keep those healthy habits. But before we jump into, you know, the meat and potatoes of today, I'm going to talk about a bad habit that I had in the past. And Toni, I just found out you didn't know this about me.
When I read this in our show notes, I was shocked. I was like, I've known Lisa for what, like 17 years now, and I don't think I had a clue that this was in your past, Lisa.
Yeah, I know. It's not something that really comes up in conversation. I don't hide it, but I just, you know, don't think about telling people, because I was actually a smoker of cigarettes, and I started in high school. So my sister and I were kind of seen as the good girls. So I think I had a bit of what's called a rebel tendency there. So I started smoking because I wanted to break that perception that people had of me of being this, like, you know, good girl, listens to all the rules. So I started smoking, and at first I hated it, but I kind of liked the head rush, and then I kept with it, and it became a habit because, as we know, tobacco is addictive. I did go through phases where I'd reduce the amount. I wasn't smoking so much, but it did start to creep up again in university where, you know, you're out partying and then the stress levels were high from studying and exams. So it really started to increase the amount of cigarettes I was smoking. And I was studying biology in university, so I was learning about health and the body. And I started to say, what am I doing to myself? I'd wake up every morning and say, I feel disgusting because I smoked yesterday. This isn't right, but I was addicted. And then I got mad because I felt like it was controlling me. I had to have that cigarette before I was, you know, going to be a TA, before I had to support a lesson. I was like, why do I need a cigarette to be a good TA? So I think those tendencies I had of being kind of a questioner and needing more information and learning more information, as well as, you know, being a rebel, why I started, first of all, but then why I wanted to quit, because I was sick of it controlling my life. So I haven't smoked since 2001. I remember I quit, I think it was September 2001. I remember having dreams after of smoking, and that was like a big nightmare, but I haven't had the urge and haven't thought about it. Hence, I haven't told anybody so that I've met in the last, you know, however many years since then. But that was one of the bad habits I had. So Toni, what about yourself? What's a habit that maybe you've struggled with in the past or now?
Oh, I've definitely had a few bad habits in the past, and those bad habits, at least some of them, tend to creep up a little bit. The big one for me is sugar and sugar intake. I have a sweet tooth, and I'm sure we've talked about it before in previous episodes as well, where, you know, there's even, you know, different stories in my families about when I was growing up and, you know, just eating all my Easter chocolate, you know, before noon one year and, you know, having just not being able to, like, ration my sugar intake, kind of sneaking sugar intake when I was little. So that's one that kind of keeps creeping up, but it's absolutely one that I've
really learn to manage much better than in the past. And I really think the key is awareness. The more I know about myself, and this kind of also taps into a bit of the questioner tendency in me of just gaining more information. The more information I know about myself, the more I can really get a sense of like why I was taking in that sugar. You know, kind of looking at my behavior, looking at my beliefs and kind of why I was reaching for the sugar, but also really being aware of, you know, what the impact of that sugar was on me. And, you know, in terms of our brain chemistry, in terms of our health, you know, increasing inflammation and impacting my digestive system and so many other things. So really getting a sense of, you know, why I was reaching for it, has really been the key in terms of me being able to manage it. And yeah, and sometimes it sneaks back in, especially, you know, when we talk a little bit about, you know, some strategies in terms of looking at the habits and looking at, you know, what kind of other structures you want to bring into your life to kind of really look at, you know, really building healthy habits and really being able to maintain them. One of the keys for me is really a bit of out of sight, out of mind. It's much better for me not to be around it. And that's definitely something that I still have to work on as well.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's so key, that awareness, right? So what is like, there's, you can kind of think of it with three steps of why we do certain things. Like there's a trigger, right? So maybe it's 5 o'clock and it's time you pour yourself a glass of wine because the work day is done and it's 9 o'clock. That just might be what you do, right? That's just part of your routine. Or if, let's say, you have an argument with your spouse or your kids set you off, it's like, okay, I'm going to run to the cupboard and I'm going to eat a bunch of chocolate or sugar, and that's going to, you know, in theory, make me feel better, maybe temporarily. So we want to be aware of, yeah, what is the trigger? Yeah, is it automatic, routine? Is our energy low? And then what is the behavior? So is it a healthy behavior to pour a glass, to always reach a glass of wine, to always reach for sugar? Is there something else that can be done instead that can offer you relief? You know, is it having a conversation? Is it getting out for a short walk if your kids are driving you bananas and you need to take a break and your partner's at home? And then actually looking at what's the outcome of that behavior? Is there a reward or does it make you feel good? And if it does, how long does that last? And then how do you feel after that period, right? Like if you have a glass of wine, typically the buzz lasts 20, 25 minutes. And I don't think, you know, after that first drink, that's probably the best you're going to feel, right? And it's like you're almost chasing that feeling by having, you know, one drink after another. So it's then figuring out, okay, what's the outcome? What's the reward? Is it worth it? So I think that's a really good place to start.
Absolutely. And that also can kind of lead into really looking at, you know, if it is a glass of wine, you know, what are my beliefs in terms of having that glass of wine? Am I reaching for it because I feel like I need it? Is that the way that I need to relax or to cope with, you know, my day to day or the world around us that we have no ability to control? And you know, do I have this belief that I can't relax or I can't cope with stress without that too?
Mm-hmm, definitely. So, you know, all of those thoughts going through your mind. And then when that trigger happens, a good strategy is to actually just set a timer. You set aside a couple minutes, 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you can. Take a few deep breaths, maybe jot down how you're feeling or do something you really enjoy, like read a few pages of a book or put on a song and dance to it. It's probably the last thing you feel like doing when you want a glass of wine, but you may get a good boost. And then after that set time period, you can revisit that urge or that trigger or craving and see, is it still there? Or do I actually need something else in this moment? So that can be a good strategy too.
Absolutely. So let's, since we kind of already talked a little bit about the four tendencies, let's kind of go through them so people know what we're talking about. And I definitely encourage people to do the quiz online. That we'll post that in the show notes. Again, Gretchen Rubin designed for people to get a sense of knowing, you know, why they kind of keep their habits or don't keep their habits, and kind of, you know, how their brain and behavior works around, you know, what we do on a day-to-day basis. Why don't we start with you discussing and describing what it's like to be an upholder, Lisa?
Sure. So I guess I've morphed through my life, right? It sounds like, you know, I was more of a questioner, rebel when I was in university, but I've definitely shifted to more of an upholder, where that an upholder is a person who meets their own inner expectations as well as outer expectations from other people or from jobs. So for example, you know, if I'm wanting to start a meditation practice, which I did several years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, I, you know, just decided one day, I said, you know what, I think I need to bring more meditation into my life. I need to learn what this does to me and practice it. So I decided, okay, I'm going to meditate for 10 minutes every day. And I got a calendar and I'd put a check mark, you know, on each square of a day that I would meditate. And me seeing each check mark day after day was enough to reinforce me to keep doing it. And as I felt better, I wanted to keep doing it as well. But that was meeting the inner expectations. And then the outer expectations would be, you know, when I had a job at certain companies and we had deadlines or meetings or certain tasks that I had to complete, I would do them. And this can bite you in the butt sometimes too, right? Because you can burn yourself out. You can take on so many things internally and externally and not say no, and then give so much of yourself that it can contribute to burnout. But in some ways, it has served me in terms of keeping up healthy habits. So this is, you know, as being a beholder, if I schedule things into my day, then they typically get done. So I typically schedule a lot of things in the morning for my self-care, you know, a walk in the afternoon, for example, reading for a little bit in the evening. So I kind of have this routine that I follow and it's easy for me to stick to. And if I'm monitoring and just saying, yeah, I did these things today in my head, yeah, I feel good, that's enough reinforcement for me. But Tony, I think you said you're more of a questioner. You want to tell people what that means?
Yeah, I'm more of a questioner. And especially, you know, even looking at the four tendencies, I can see different aspects where it makes sense for me. But it wasn't until I did the quiz that I was really, you know, it really confirmed that, yes, I really do mostly fit as a questioner, where I tend to resist outer expectations. There's definitely pieces where I do like to meet outer expectations. So in a sense, I can be a bit of an obliger as well, which we'll get into. But my inner expectations really matter. I'm very much data driven. I really like to gather a lot of information, and I do have the desire to create more efficient and effective systems. And sometimes I do like to play devil's advocate. It isn't enough often, especially for specific things. It isn't enough for someone to tell me, oh, this is the way you should do things, or again, kind of tell me what to do. I really tend to be a bit strong-willed that way. And sometimes I do like to play devil's advocate to see other sides and kind of question rules and expectations. But the real key piece where I was like, oh yes, I'm a questioner, is because often questioners can suffer from analysis paralysis. That idea of like being bombarded with so much information or so many different ideas that you're just stuck and you just don't know what to do. So what can really help with that is you can manage that with setting deadlines, establishing limits, and some people, again, consulting authorities and getting that information to really get a sense of, okay, you know, what really makes sense to me, in terms of, you know, what I'm going to do, what habits I'm going to have. It really is about gaining that clarity to answer the question why. So that's the having a strategy of clarity, but also having a strategy of accountability can be key as well. And this is where monitoring data, monitoring what you're doing, collecting data, that can be really key for a questioner. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there is a bit of me that can be an obliger as well, where it really is important to meet those outer expectations of other people. Obligers tend to put a high value on meeting commitments to others, where it is, you know, more of that, those, the people pleasing tendencies, where they'll do anything for someone else, whether it's a family member or a client or a patient or you know, someone else in your life. It is, you know, someone who does require deadlines, does require monitoring and other forms of accountability and oversight to really, you know, get things happening. And what can also be helpful for people who are obligers are giving themselves treats so that, you know, if I do this, okay, then I can, you know, reward myself, treat myself with X, Y, or Z. And, you know, probably a piece of me being an obliger is that that tendency to be a people pleaser and kind of being both socialized to do that, but also having that tendency when I was younger. And it may be that I'm just kind of leaving some of my obliging tendencies behind as I'm getting older as well.
I know, it's so fascinating, right? The evolution and what parts of those, we'll still get to the rebel, that's the fourth tendency, but what parts of those tendencies mm-hmm. you have now, maybe as it evolved as you've gotten older. And just as like a brief summary, so upholders, so those would be, you know, those patients that come to our office, Tony, and they're like, tell me what to do, I'm going to do it. And they're going to stick to the plan, right? They're like, yeah, I'm going to take all these steps and I'm good with that. The questioner would be that patient who's like, I need to know why. Why are you telling me this? What's the research? What's the information behind it? It needs to make sense for me to do it. You can't just tell me what to do. The obliger would be, okay, I want to start exercising more, but I'm not going to go to the gym unless I've paid for personal training sessions or I'm meeting my friend there. You know, Gretchen Rubin shares a story about obligers that two friends, they would each have one of each other's shoes. So if they both didn't go to the gym, the other person couldn't work out. So I thought that was an interesting strategy. So they both had to meet each other at the gym, exchange, you know, the second shoe, so then they could both do their workout. And then I'll get into the rebel. But the rebel is, you know, if you tell them to do something, they're not going to listen, and they may actually do the opposite too. And what they do is around their identity. So for me, for example, when I was, I guess, more of a trying to be a rebel in high school, I wanted to smoke to make that as part of my, I wanted to be a rebel, I guess. I wanted to make that my identity. I didn't want to be the good girl as people were labeling me as. So they make changes based on how it's, you know, how it's going to fit with their identity. So if they're going to exercise, they're probably not going to do the same thing that everybody else is doing, right? Maybe they're going to rock climb. Maybe they're going to hula hoop. They're going to do something really different and kind of out there. So getting into the rebel tendency. So these are the people that resist inner and outer expectations. They just want to go with the flow. They want to see how they're feeling and what they do needs to add to their identity. They need to have, you know, that independence for sure. They want to be able to think outside the box. So these might be the people that, you know, move across overseas to work remotely. They might be that person who starts their own business when they're 40. These people live by their own rules, and they can struggle with repetitive or mandatory tasks. So this, you know, it can be valuable as well. Because they can see things from a totally different perspective, but it may be hard for them to get certain things done within a framework of expectations of other people.
And there's a piece of rebels that I wonder, especially, you know, if we are having this ability to shift our tendencies based on, you know, where we're at in our lives. I wonder, as we're going into perimenopause and into menopause, and as we get older, and as we have maybe less demands from our kids and obligations around families and that kind of thing, whether, you know, as we get older, that we do take on some of these rebellious tendencies, especially the idea of really being unswayed by conventional opinion and really wanting to buck social conventions. You know, I can kind of see how this is kind of creeping in more in my life, where I'm like, I'm over 40, I have my kid, you know, I'm not necessarily going to, you know, I don't feel like following what is expected of me as a woman, or, you know, what I should be looking like or doing or that kind of thing. So I wonder if there is this piece that this rebellious tendency can start to maybe kind of creep in as we get older as well. What do you think about that,
Lisa? I think that's a great way to look at it. And we may have had these rebellious tendencies, but when we had families and jobs, you know, that obliger tendency might have been forced upon us. So then when there's a bit of space to not be as much of an obliger, this rebel tendency that we probably had all along, but weren't able to nurture it, can come out full force, right? It's like, let me do what I want to do. Yes, I've cared for so many other people. And now it's time to, you know, really sit back and think about what I want and make that happen too. So I think that's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And, you know, really to be able to again, get a sense of what are these tendencies? What's the differences? Where do I fit? How do I fit a different tendency depending on where I am in my life? Again, I think this is such great information and awareness to have about yourself so that you can look at those decisions. You can look at, you know, what your habits are in your life and what you really want your life to look like, so you can have some satisfaction, happiness, peace, productivity in your life.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So we're just covering, you know, the surface of this information. So definitely check out Gretchen Rubin's podcast called Happier. I think it's called Happier. And then her books, she has several books, including The Four Tendencies. So you want to dive a little bit deeper there. But this information is so valuable. And then to even understand, you know, your partners, your coworkers, you know, why they're doing things or why they're not doing things can be really valuable as well. And then as you're listening to this, you're probably thinking about, you know, some habits that you'd like to start to incorporate. But I also want you to think about why. We touched on this in the, you know, no resolutions, you know, kind of bucking resolutions for New Year's, but we really want to come from a place of self-love when we want to introduce a healthy habit, right? A lot of times it's like, I need to lose 15 pounds because I feel like I look disgusting. Whereas, okay, maybe I need to lose 15 pounds because I want to have more energy for my kids. I don't want my joints to ache and I want to live a longer, healthier life. We want to do it from a place of self-love, not like self-loathing. So really think about habits that are going to serve you and make you feel better. So whether it's drinking more water, you know, drinking less alcohol, moving your body a bit more, connecting with friends, reading books, getting in touch with a habit or hobby that you used to really enjoy but have let go. So really start to think about one of those habits that's going to nurture you. And then we can discuss some strategies on how to fit that into your day. How does that sound, Tony?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that piece of, you know, coming from more of a positive viewpoint in terms of shifting our habits is really key. Because, yeah, if you're coming from a negative place of, you know, either, you know, depriving yourself or punishing yourself, and not from a place of compassion and love for yourself, then it's really not going to stick. It's really important to be mindful and be intentional about what you're doing and having a reason and kind of, you know, remembering the why behind it that really is going to fuel the kind of life that you want and fuel your, again, happiness, your energy, your satisfaction, your fulfillment in your life.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, quick ways to remember your why is to put sticky notes around the house. Like, you know, I'm going to drink more water, and there's a sticky note, you know, on the fridge. So when you open the fridge, you're like, I'm going to, you know, fill my glass with water. So having a screensaver that maybe shows you completing a marathon or someone completing a marathon, whatever that goal is, just so you remember, because a lot of times we're on autopilot, right? I've had people do my 5-day sugar-free reset, and they started off the first day and they ate sugar just because they were used to clearing off their kids' plates after dessert. They didn't even realize they were doing it, right? So you were just sometimes just shove things in our mouth, or we don't do certain things just because it's automatic. So if we have little things that disrupt our regular patterns, even using technology with, you know, things to pop up on your phone, reminders to remind you to drink water, for example, to remind you to move, this is going to be a really good way to remember the why, but also be intentional, like remind yourself every day what it looks like to fit these behaviors in.
For sure. And especially if you're really looking at changing a behavior or changing the habit, a real key piece is actually really choosing to do it, deciding to do it, and committing to making that shift. And for a lot of people, what can be helpful to really solidify that commitment is actually putting it in your calendar, scheduling it. And sometimes it can be a matter of, you know, breaking up that change into kind of, or behavior into smaller bite-sized chunks. If you know, kind of an all or nothing approach just won't work. But it can also be really helpful to pair something with a shift or a change with something else. And this is where, you know, even something like, I really wanted to commit to increasing my water intake during the day. And for me, it really made sense to do that first thing in the morning. So I will pair having that glass, a big glass of water and putting some lemon in it and getting that prepared with getting Frankie's breakfast ready so that I'm doing that together and it just happens together instead of me having to think of it completely separately from everything else that I'm doing.
I love that. Yeah, I love I pair doing Kegels when I'm blow drying my hair, for example, because I'm like, I'm not going to find time outside of this, or I'm not going to make time, I should say. I could always find time if I wanted to. And then even in terms of, water, you know, having a glass of water in every room that I'm going to be in can be really beneficial too. And then even, you know, everybody's washing their hands right now for 20 seconds. So during those 20 seconds, can you take a few deep belly breaths? Can you say a word or two of affirmation or self-love? And people really love pairing gratitude practice while they're in the shower. So instead of thinking about, oh, I got to do this and this and this, actually just saying three things they're grateful for in their mind while they're having a shower. So you can pair it to so many different activities in your day. And it does break it down into bite-sized chunks, right? Because if you're like, I have to drink 2 to 3 liters of water and you see it just as that, you're like, that's not going to happen. But if it's like, okay, I need a glass here, I need a glass there, I need a glass at this time, you're more likely to do that.
Absolutely. And what can also be really helpful is to actually tell someone you're going to be making this change so that you can be accountable and someone can check in on you to see how you're doing. Because if you're just going to keep it, you know, to yourself, especially those people who have more of those obliger tendencies, being able to share that with others so that that people will be checking in on you and you can be accountable. And again, that could be sharing it with a friend or, you know, signing up to do an online challenge where a piece of it is, you know, sharing your progress and also like monitoring your progress and really getting a sense of, you know, are you, following through with, you know, these changes that you're making every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many ways, whether, you're accountable to yourself by tracking it in a calendar or a journal, you're posting it on social media in a group that's, you know, has a similar habit or goal that they're trying to keep. You're just telling your partner, you're texting your friend at the end of the day, you're telling each other, yes, I got my 10,000 steps in. So it can look like different. It can be different, but so valuable to do because once you put it out there, you're more likely to do it. And then monitoring the progress too is really key. So just having that awareness of how you're feeling when you're drinking more water or how you're feeling the next day when you go to bed a half hour earlier, really getting into that because that's going to reinforce the behavior instead of looking at like, oh, I'm not watching my favorite show at night anymore because I'm going to bed a half hour earlier, really sitting with the feelings of what it feels like to be rested and in a good state of mind. So look at what you're gaining as opposed to what you're giving up and just track, monitoring when you're actually doing that habit. And then it's a reinforcement after you've done it for a certain number of days. You typically don't want to give it up, right? You're like, oh, I've meditated for a week straight. I'm going to keep going. But then that can also sabotage some people too, because let's say you're monitoring it and you miss a day. Some people just throw everything out the window and they're like, oh, I didn't exercise today. and then they don't exercise for months. So we do want to avoid this all or nothing thinking too. So let's say you have a setback or you just weren't able to keep that habit up for a day, for a week, for a month, whatever it is. Just recognize that every decision is a new decision. Every moment is a new moment. So you can start over at any second. It doesn't have to be a Monday. It doesn't have to be New Year's. It doesn't have to be September. So every choice is a new choice. So forgive yourself. That's where the self-compassion and self-love come in. Talk to yourself like a friend. You know, if your friend didn't exercise for a day, you wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, you ruined it. You can't stick to anything. This is never going to be successful. You wouldn't say that, right? You'd say, no, just get back on the train the next day. So talk to yourself like a friend and avoid that all or nothing thinking.
Absolutely. Tomorrow is another day. And it's so human to fall off track of something. So, you can really get into, a rut of, beating yourself up for something, but having that self-compassion and that self-forgiveness is a real key to moving forward and getting back on track as well.
Definitely. So Tony, how do you keep habits kind of front of mind or going? Do you have any strategies that you share, routines that tend to help you out?
Well, definitely, journaling and especially a bullet journal for me is so super key to keep things front of mind. I find for me, if it's not written down, it typically will not happen, especially for kind of other bigger tasks. There's, a piece where, once a habit becomes a habit for me, something like, drinking more water, I can kind of keep up with it. I may miss a day or so, but something like that is just so set for me already that I don't necessarily need to absolutely check it off in a journal, but other things can, are definitely important to kind of check off, in terms of having a foundation there. Tracking sometimes can be super helpful, but also just scheduling, really putting things in my schedule, whether it's going to be, meditating or again, eating habits or organizing habits, writing habits, so many other things, I find that they do need to be scheduled. Tracking can also be, super helpful. I joined a challenge where I'm doing a virtual, going along the Cabot Trail. So that kind of tracking can be really helpful. And knowing that I'm going to be tracking for me is super helpful also as a motivator to be like, okay, yes, if I go for this walk, then I get to track these kilometers that I've done. So that can be really helpful.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So you're walking and then tracking, like aiming for the distance of the Cabot Trail.
Absolutely. Which is over 200 kilometers. So,
wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So it can be, that can be really, again, so super motivating. And especially, again, that kind of idea can be very social and have accountability as well, if you want it to. Some people, choose not to, but that can also be, again, you're a part of a group all doing this at the same time too.
Yeah, that's a key strategy, right? Is surrounding yourself with a community, whether it's virtual or in person, because our habits are dictated by those around us, right? If our partner's going to snack late at night in front of the TV, we're more likely going to join them. Even our happiness levels are influenced by our friends and those we surround ourselves with. So using social media, using your community wherever possible can be key. And I decided to go alcohol free for, it's been 44 days now. So every day is a new day. Right now, there's a good saying that, I drink how much I want, whenever I want, but right now I'm not drinking anything. So, nice. So I've done that because I recognized how I was feeling. So I think it was that awareness of the next day, even after a drink or two, I didn't drink a ton, like I used to in the past, but I would feel a little snappy the next day, or my mood would be off, or my energy would be off. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to take a break from it. And then I found there's this online community. It's called the Live Alcohol Experiment. So it's where, you're virtually connecting with people on Facebook. You get videos every day. So it's, trying to look at your relationship relationship with alcohol and actually understand what alcohol does to you. Does it actually make you feel the way you think it's making you feel? And it's just having that awareness as well as that social connection and community. So I find that can be so powerful for people. So if anyone has, you know, they want to experiment or become more aware with of their alcohol intake, read the Alcohol Experiment book, or it's called This Naked Mind. Check out This Naked Mind podcast. It's fascinating about ways to break unhealthy habits. And I think she's going to start to apply it to when people are binge eating or overindulging in sugar, but you can apply some of the principles to that as well.
Oh, that is really awesome. We'll definitely link to that in our show notes so that people can check that out. And again, see if it makes sense for them, depending on what kind of habits they're looking at shifting in their life right now.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'm not saying I'm never having alcohol again, but right now I'm just feeling really good. So I'm just riding that wave.
I think that's fantastic, especially, you know, over the pandemic. And as moms, it is kind of one of those things for us to really kind of look at and you know, be mindful of is our relationship with alcohol. It can be such an easy go-to in terms of dealing with stress. And it can just be part of a routine. So really, again, being mindful, having that awareness around it can be really beneficial for a lot of people and a lot of women out there.
Yeah, if you asked me to not drink alcohol at the start of the pandemic, I would have said, hell no.
For sure. Absolutely.
So you have different seasons in your life where it may seem more attractive or something you want to do. So it's there, you know, if that interests you. But definitely the scheduling, getting up early and doing my workout in the morning. It was before Stuart used to get up, but now he's getting up really early. But I'll just set him up with the computer and he'll watch one of his shows while I work out. So, you know, I make that happen still, and I don't let him getting up early kind of be an excuse for me to not work out. I'll still spend quality time because we have plenty of time before he has to go to preschool, or, you know, on the weekends we have a lot of time, but I just make that, it's like, he says, oh, mommy, I'd like to play. And I say, well, this is my time to work out. I'll be done soon. And then we can play after. So really carving that time out makes a huge difference for me.
That's fantastic. That's still something in terms of a morning routine that I can struggle with, because I do struggle. I can struggle with, okay, well, you know, what's Frankie going to do? But again, it's just one of those things to really like choose and get your child enrolled too, by saying, yeah, this is what mommy's doing right now. And I'll be there, you know, we'll do this after I'm done. And I think that's a great thing to do, especially, you know, when they're young, to start them out that way. So that's very inspiring for me, Lisa. I'm glad. Taking that on.
I know when they're super young, it's like, okay, once they're up, you got to hold them, but maybe your partner can hold them for a bit. So there's different phases too, right? But that's where we're at right now. He's able to kind of entertain himself, which didn't always happen. So we do the best we can, right? At the timing that we have. So
for sure.
Great. So do you think we've covered enough about habits, Tony? Should we move on to the next part of the podcast?
I think so. I think we gave a lot of people some tips and some things to think about for themselves too. So, Lisa, do you have a super mom moment for us this week?
I do. I think, you know, with the pandemic, at first I was feeling really restless, and I still get those days, right? But it really has forced us to slow down and appreciate the small things. Weekends before would be, okay, let's go check out this festival. Let's go for this long hike. Let's do. Let's socialize. And not really feeling satisfied by just going for a walk in the neighborhood, you know, playing in the playground while physically distancing, baking something. And I really appreciated just those small things. Like this weekend, I made a pumpkin pie that took a long time and I enjoyed it. Normally, like before the pandemic, would have been like, oh, that's a waste of time. I'm just going to buy it. I want to go actually do something. But I really savored that time just creating and baking, and even just being in the moment with Stuart and playing and not feeling like it has to be, okay, we have to go to the trampoline place and we have to go to gymnastics. We made a house out of a box, and we made doors and a roof, and, you know, really dive deep into imaginative play. So I think that's my super mom moment, is to really just recognizing the enjoyment and slowing down and in the small things.
Oh, that's awesome. That can be so beneficial. And definitely the pandemic has given us the opportunity to do that if you, again, take that opportunity. So it's definitely great to recognize that.
And Tony, I know you're doing a great job, but can you think of maybe something that didn't go so well or a bit of a mess up that happened recently?
Oh yeah, for sure. I definitely had a mama mess up just yesterday. I couldn't find Frankie's bike helmet, the helmet for us to go for a bike ride anywhere. And, you know, we talked about going for a bike ride. We grabbed her bike. It was, the weather was kind of up and down yesterday, but we were outside while it was nice and sunny. So it was like, yes, let's go for a bike ride. Let's get out there. And I looked everywhere for her helmet. Usually it's right with her bike, but I couldn't find it. She couldn't go for a bike ride, which, you know, I just felt like I totally failed as a mom right there. And then later I found it like tucked beside the TV in the living room. And I realized, you know, I had seen it there earlier, but I didn't do anything about it. I didn't pick it up right away and move it, you know, closer to the door or somewhere where it was more visible so that, you know, I could like take it outside to the garage with her bike. So I just felt so bad that she couldn't go for a bike ride because she loves riding her bike. And I love the fact that she loves riding her bike. Yeah. And lesson learned.
Oh, well, you're still doing a great job. We have so much like, you know, so many things that we're thinking of and juggling. We see something like, we should do this now, but oh, I'll do it later. And then sometimes that can happen, but you're still doing an amazing job.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. So, and Lisa, what's your mama must have for this week?
Yeah. So talking about habits, you know, I do have some dark chocolate every day after lunch with like a nice rooibos chai tea. But my chocolate amount was starting to creep up again. And I'm like, oh, maybe this is affecting my sleep. So I cut down my chocolate. I still have a little bit, but then I supplement it with the Australian Carob Co. Carob chips. They're delicious. So I get them on Natura Market. They have like a little bit of sweetness. They're semi-sweet, but they're caffeine-free because it's made of carob. So it's the Australian Carob Co. Carob chips. And Stuart likes them too. So then he's not getting so much of the stimulating effect from chocolate. So that's my mama must have of the week. And they have some recipes on their website I want to try. They even have carob powder, which I still need to get. But Tony, what's your mama must have right now?
Well, that sounds delicious, Lisa. And actually, my mama must have is another delicious treat that you talked about probably closer to the beginning of the podcast. I think last year you were talking about getting smart sweets for Stuart's birthday. And then after hearing about you having them, you know, I saw them at the store. I thought, okay, we need to try this, especially, you know, when we were potty training Frankie. I didn't want to use, you know, I thought it'd be good to use a treat, but I didn't want to use something that had sugar in it. So the smart sweets are great because they're not sweetened with sugar. And we're a big fan of the gummy bears at our house, but also then recently I just found that they have peach rings. And I, you know, in terms of, you know, a candy, fuzzy peaches was one of my go-to. So it's nice to be able to have, you know, a sweet treat without having to, you know, really be worried about the sugar content, especially, you know, that idea of, you know, being stimulated in the evening with it, or again, having, a sugar high and a sugar crash and stimulating insulin and, you know, all of the stuff that, you know, we've been talking about on this podcast. So I love the smart sweet treats.
Yeah, they're really good. My favorite are the fish, and Stuart loves the gummy worms. So we try to, you know, give him like 5 or 6 gummy worms, and that's his ration, but he really, really enjoys it too. So if you haven't tried it, anyone out there, you might not want to because they are addictive. So just a warning, a disclaimer.
Well, and it's nice that they come in kind of smaller packages too. So this that again, you can really do your portion control with
this.
Yes. But they are tasty. They're very tasty.
They are. So great mama must have. Thanks for sharing, Tony. And for then sure. What do you have going on right now? Any events coming up? Anything for us to look out for?
Oh, definitely. I have my next hypnobirthing info session and classes for expecting parents, especially those parents who are really wanting
to, you know, be able to trust their instincts, really look at a natural physiological birth and also learn to relax and reduce stress in not only in labor and birth, but also in pregnancy. So that's happening this month. So anyone who's interested can go to the website hypnobirthingcalgary.com and find the links to the next classes and the next info session there. How about you, Lisa?
Yeah, so I have two of my enrollments for the Wild Collective Toronto running right now. We're going to be talking about thyroid tomorrow night, and next week we're talking about blood sugar and nutrition. But I have a wait list to get on in my fall 2021 enrollment of the Wild Collective Toronto. So if you want to be the first to know, because spots are limited, I already have a good wait list for the next enrollment, but get on the wait list at wildcollectivetoronto.com. It's a unique and international women's health community initiative that I'm getting such good response about. So check that out for sure.
Sounds awesome. So thanks everyone for joining us today. Again, the show notes are at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can email us or connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. If you enjoyed our episodes, we'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating so that other perimenopausal mamas can find us too.
Stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.